Let's do this. We're doing it live. 22 minutes in. Decode Podcast. What's up? It's your boy, Wally132, and your boy, Omega Zed, here in the Waypoint Cafe, 65 Ludlow Street. What are we going to talk about today? Let's get started. Talking about some Activision. Activision, what you doing? Why are you firing everyone? That's crazy. We just trying to out here making and playing and enjoying games, and then you just lay off like 70% of your staff? Why? Because you're not making money? Is that why you mad, Activision? Is that why you mad? It's crazy. Next up, Overwatch League starts today. Isn't that crazy? Overwatch League starts today. And what happened yesterday? Activision fired a bunch of people.
It's okay.
All right, they caught up. Okay, we good.
All right. So obviously we're gonna talk about some gaming and esports news. But yeah, so Activision Blizzard's in the news as always.
Oh my gosh.
This is the special Decode episode, blooper special.
This is Decode Abridged.
anyway, guys, welcome to the Decode Podcast. As Wally was so affectionately pointing out to, we come to you live from the Waypoint Cafe over at 65 Ludlow Street in the Lower East Side. Gino is out of office today, as you can tell by our botched experimentation with the technical difficulties
so
that we
smart.
Had earlier. Because someone decided to mess with all the stuff here, so it is what it is. We're here with the things I could find, so a lot of stuff's all over the place, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to give you the podcast. Thanks to you for everyone who is coming into the chat for dropping on by. This is the Decode Podcast. We are on episode 49. It's all right, Gino. Thank you. We'll figure it out when you get back. But in the meantime, let's go run through the gamut of gaming and esports news. This was a huge week. For esports and a lot of things, but before we get into the esports thing, we got some gaming news that I wanted to touch on. More specifically, we had earnings reports coming in. EA did theirs. Most recently, Activision and Ubisoft have done theirs. I want to talk a little bit about what Activision has put up. Activision reported a $7.2 million earnings credential this year, which is amazing, right?
Yeah, it's really great. Good. That's what we do.
That's what you want to do.
That's
unfortunately, they laid off 800 employees. Granted, a lot of the layoffs were PR development stuff.
The thing is, I can understand a lot of people were saying that. They were saying, granted, it's PR. But at the end of the day, that's still jobs.
It's still jobs loss. But it comes amidst a very peculiar...
Especially when they're not in the best light PR-wise.
No. It comes from a very peculiar standpoint because Bobby Kotick and the other investors that were on the investor call, they were one of the things that I loved was the shade they decided to throw at Bungie. Like, we wish them the best of luck as they try to do this without any other... It's like, the only reason they had to take on High Noon Studios and Treyarch is because you demanded that they put out annual content. When Bungie's like, we want to do this stuff at our pace, like, let's make one major DLC thing... updated, of course, for the plan of a year. And Activision was like, no, you have to do three a year. Do it now. We don't have the manpower for that. Here's teams. Do it now.
That's pretty much what it was. And
The shade was very potent.
It was like beach umbrellas were placed down everywhere during that call, apparently.
Yeah.
But it's like we were saying. Like, yes, it is PR that was let go. Which... We're not saying...
Some of the Heroes of the Storm devs are unfortunately no longer with the company.
And we're not saying that PR and everything are not important parts of the company. We're not saying. They are just as important as developers, as producers, as writers, because PR is another branch of game development. So let's just put that out there. But it's still an utter shame that they had to do this.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
It's funny that they say, because in that same investor call, they were like, you know, we pride on our culture of our employees and stuff like that. We love all of our employees. And I'm like, you just laid off 800, and obviously you don't know them enough.
You obviously don't know them enough.
But that's usually like corporate speak for, we just laid off these people. We're probably going to rehire them back on. Lower pay rate.
Yeah, that's basically corporate speak that they were talking right there. And like, I've been in the corporate game for like 12 years. Listening to that call, I'm like, yeah, there's a whole lot of corporate double talk going on here.
Yeah.
And it is not surprising that they are kind of like resorting to such tactics. Mm-hmm. It doesn't surprise me one bit, considering
the major hit that they took themselves when Bungie just picked up their toys and left the sandbox. So,
but because, you know, Destiny 2 didn't meet expectations, however lofty those expectations were, considering that your product was completely different when it launched, when Destiny 2 first launched, to what it is now. But $7.3 billion is not enough money, Wally.
That's apparently not enough money to them.
It's not enough money.
It's not enough money to them. And it's really...
Because you can only have all the money in the world.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but I'm kind of putting them on the EA status. They are officially on EA status for me.
For you?
Yes.
So just writing them off?
Oh, I'm writing them off. Yeah. Oh, Activision, yeah. I'm writing them off. I am writing... I'm not sure if I even want to play... I don't know if I want to play Hearthstone anymore.
I don't even want to play... I don't want to touch Overwatch anymore.
I'm not sure, because it's just... it just feels dirty.
It's funny, because EA, because of the backlash, is starting to change their tune. They're still not doing enough for me to really, like, want to...
Oh, no.
...say that I want to play more EA stuff.
No, no. I mean, but also they have to actually make games I want to play.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, they put out occasional titles that I'm like,
that's interesting.
Oh. Like, you know that indie title, Faye?
Yeah.
That's an EA public game.
That's an EA game? Wow.
It's an amazing game.
That's so surprising. All right.
I want to play Star Wars.
Yeah.
It's Star Wars!
I would love to play a Star Wars game. First, I would like a Star Wars game.
We have Battlefront.
I would like a Star Wars game.
Yes.
I like the lie you're telling yourself.
It's technically Star Wars. I want to like Anthem.
No, I would really like, and that's what kind of is obsessing, because every time I look at all this Anthem stuff, because, like, well, shout out to my boy Eric, who's, like, once again putting out great content every single week. He's showing up all this great stuff about Anthem, and I'm sitting here like, I would love to play this, but then deep down in my heart of hearts, I'm like, EA's gonna EA this game, you know, and that's what really has me upset about it.
It feels like that's what's gonna
happen.
Yeah,
I really feel like down the road EA is gonna EA.
So EA is like on that little like, I'm still weary, man.
Yeah, I think they may have moved up from old guild status.
Maybe. I think Activision is now the new old guild.
Yeah, Activision is slowly becoming the new old guild. You know,
we're gonna have to change the meme. We're gonna have to old guild now.
I think Activision is now disappointing stepdad, while EA is now cool.
I'm perfectly
uncle.
Fine no longer purchasing an Activision product anymore. As hyped as I was for, like, Sekiro, Shadow of the Colossus, I don't even want to buy it, because I know it's Activision is going to make the money.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for it, because it's From Software. While I'm not a fan of the Souls game, I liked Bloodborne.
This feels
like it's going to be another one in that vein.
It feels like it.
And I don't even want it
anymore. It really does feel like it's going to be, like, another one of those Bloodborne game kind of style games, where it's, like, you're given one weapon, and they just toss you out into this world, which I like that kind of genre. I've always been a fan of that kind of genre. But I don't know. I don't know if I can just give them my money now. You know, it just feels really greasy.
I feel like I can give Ubisoft my money
over EA and Activision
right now.
Yes, I can really.
Speaking of Ubisoft, they also reported earnings for the 2018 year. And you know what they didn't have to do? They didn't have to lay off people.
They didn't. No, they just actually put out games people want to play, so...
They put out things want to play. You know, Wally likes to keep Assassin's Creed alive by himself.
I not for nothing, but I'm excited for my Assassin's Creed on my Switch.
That's going to be the talking point at the end of the show. We're obviously going to go over the Nintendo Direct. But Ubisoft reported earnings.
They reported pretty good earnings, yeah.
THQ even had some announcements of their own.
Surprised me.
They reported that Darksiders 3 actually met their expectations.
It did.
Actually exceeded their expectations.
I was surprised by it exceeded. I had a feeling it was going to meet the expectations, because THQ is kind of like that sleeping giant that when it does wake up, it's like this huge offensive force that will dominate the market, and then after they do that one thing, they're like, okay, that's it, you're not gonna hear anything else for us for a very long time, but when we do make a game, we make a game, you know?
So Darksiders 3 had a little bit of a rough launch, but they were very quick to patch it in, and at one point they even patched in the original control scheme from Darksiders
1 and 2. Oh my gosh, that made it so much better.
So much better.
When I first played it, it's like, you know that scene in Talladega Nights where he's like, what do I do with my hands?
Yeah.
That was me playing Darksiders 3 where I'm like, what is this? This doesn't feel right. But then when they updated that patch, I was like, okay, I can now officially play this game and feel comfortable.
So it's been really cool. But Activision, you get the big, solid,
You get the pfft from us. You get one D's out of five.
Anyway, God, I just... Video games are bad. Like, I hate these companies. It pisses me off.
Let's talk about a fun company.
You know what? Let's talk about some of the things that EA actually does right. Let's talk about some of the stuff that's been going on with Apex Legends.
That's an EA game. It makes no sense.
That game has no right being...
Apex Legends has no right being two things. One, it has no right being an EA game. Two, it has no right being a Battle Royale game that Wally's going to enjoy playing.
Yeah, like, I got tired of Battle Royale. Like, I played PUBG competitively for a little bit. I was like, yeah. And I got into the Fortnite thing, and I was like, yeah. Apex Legends, I want to play.
You know what I think it is? And we were talking about it before, that Apex Legends is, like, the hero character version of a Battle Royale game.
Right.
Because it gives you your roles and everything like that. Like, when you're doing your character select, you see, like, these are the roles you can fulfill with these characters. And you have the possibility of just being an all DPS team or all healer team. This, you know, it's one of those possibilities. But I think what's so interesting about Apex Legends is that it... So when you play Fortnite and PUBG, everything, even though you were on a team, you didn't feel like you were on a team.
Right.
You really felt like you're just one in a million. And like half the time, when you jump out the bus or whatever, you still feel like you're on your own, even though, like, yeah, I'm on this team, but I have no idea who my teammates are.
Right.
I have no idea who my teammates are. I feel no team coercion or anything like that. In Apex Legend, they make sure you feel right off the bat. Like, as soon as the game starts, it reminds you you're on a team. Because this is what it does. As soon as you're in the bus, it has that really cool, like, targeting, that highlight system that it does. And it says, like, okay, one member of the team chooses where you drop off at. And I'm like, wait, they choose? And then, like, you suddenly see the little pink points, like, we can go over there, or we can go there. Guys, where do you want to go? And I'm like, I get to choose? And then you vote. I'm like, well, we're going to go over here. I'm like, okay. And then I'm about to hit the jump button. And I'm like, nothing's happening. What? Oh, you mean they choose when we jump? Okay, and then you jump. And I'm like, so we're diving down, and I'm thinking, okay, I guess I'll just, like, rear my controller to the left, and like, maybe, like, land at the point, but not exactly on the point for strategic purposes. No, all three of you are falling in formation to the drop point. So I'm like, oh, this is actually a team. It's not like we're just thrown randomly on the map and expected to, like, work together. You are actually working as a cohesive team, and it's great. I love it.
There's a lot of things that the game does design-wise that I want to talk about. But before we get into the design aspect of what makes Apex Legends really work, a couple of things that hit it off right off the bat.
Oh, gosh.
For the first thing off above, Apex Legends has literally smashed every record on Twitch that Fortnite once held.
That speaks
in the span of
volumes.
Days.
That speaks volumes about this game.
It is the most watched game on Twitch of all time right now. It also has the highest jump in watched games. It also is beating Fortnite's current player base right now.
Right.
Which is amazing.
You know what I blame it on? The fact is that it took the fact you have the world-building nature behind it of that Overwatch has or had,
right,
the whole possible world building aspect that Overwatch had, and you throw it into a game where two games that came out that had no real world building aspect. Every now and then you saw, like, you know, when the patches came out, there was a little bit of world building stuff into it, but there was nothing really like world building. This is the first time we've had like a battle royale that has like a legit storyline that you can you now feel like you are playing a game instead of just like running around on a map trying to kill everyone else.
And I think what makes it really unique is like when you play the game, it does a lot of things to really accent that play aspect of it. So one of the first things that I know that caught me off the bat was the song that plays when you're dropping in.
Yeah.
It's freaking
the
epic.
The soundtrack to this game is phenomenal. Yeah. The drop zone music, the character select music is great. Amazing.
And even that menu alone. So I think, I don't know if I did it on a show, if I just said it when Mario and I were doing the Retro Rumble, how like how the first Devil May Cry had so many awesome things, like when you pick the gun,
it flipped fired.
You're like, yeah, I got the shotgun. Yeah. So, like, I like that the same thing happens when you pick your character. They do, like,
yeah, they, and they have this, like, little quote they say.
Yeah.
By the way, Pathfinder, bless your precious robot heart. You can do me no wrong. You're my favorite character, Pathfinder. You're wonderful. You're the best boy. Now. But no, it's so great because it just makes you feel like it gave me that love. You know, when you remember when you first played Overwatch,
right?
And you picked your character the first time. That's the kind of feeling I had when I was playing Apex Legends for the first time. I was picking my character. I was like, am I playing a shooter? No, I'm playing some weird like hero fighting game shooting thing. Around, yes. That's what it felt like. I was like selecting a character. And also, I think what helped was like the whole storyline you saw at the beginning when you first started the game for the first time. It says like, oh yeah, these are all people who are the best at what they do, and they're now in a tournament to prove that they are the best at what they do, and they are now the top of the echelon. They are the apex of everything they are in. And I'm like, okay, let's do this. Yeah. You know,
it's a simple premise.
It's simple, incredibly simple premise.
It's just amazing. But going into the esports side of things, we had a Apex tournament this couple of days ago. I think it was on February 12th, so literally 2 days.
Yeah, about 2 days ago. Yeah, recording. Yeah. I remember I was
Happy Valentine's Day, guys.
I know I peeked into like
have a couple. Potato.
I know I did peek into it. Like I didn't watch it from start, thing. But I did like jump in like when I was doing other stuff. I was like jumping in and out watching it.
To no surprise, Ninja's team. Ninja, the popular Fortnite player, his team was the one that wins.
Oh, you mean? Why are you calling it Ninja's team?
Because he's the famous one. But in truth, we all know that it was Dizzy who carried an entire squad with the most kills in like every game they played.
Oh my gosh.
He won like every 1v3 he was in.
Yeah.
And the thing is, Dizzy is a very known Battle Royale player. This was his first tournament ever.
Yes.
So congrats, Dizzy.
Congratulations, Dizzy.
Other Dizzy, not Dizzy and Chad.
I mean, we love you anyway, Dizzy. But it doesn't matter.
So the team was King Richard, Ninja, and Dizzy, who are very popular Battle Royale players, Fortnite, PUBG, etc. They partnered together, and they won the first ever Apex Legends tournament that was held on February 12th.
I will say this about it, because like we were joking about it before. It was like pretty much Ninja and the people who carried him
to
this tournament.
So there's some headlines out there that point that were like, oh, Ninja wins first ever Apex Legends tournament. Like, I'm sitting there like, no Ninja got
Ninja
carried.
Now we're not knocking Ninja. You're a good player, Ninja. Don't get me wrong, but I think what you're going to need to do is start dabbling in some hero-based games.
I really think
that's what he needs to do.
Fortnite is its own little thing.
It is. It really is.
It doesn't have a very high skill ceiling. Like every Fortnite character plays exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Then you have something like Apex Legends, where like you really got to know the kit that your character is riding with.
I think the fact that this is a game, this is the first time where he's like playing a game where like characters have roles in the Battle Royale kind of situation. Because you're only Battle Royale, so you don't have roles that you have to fulfill. This is the first time he's playing a game where he has to play a character that has a definite role on the team. So I think what Ninja really needs to do going forward, he's going to have to practice with games like Overwatch. If he wants to really learn the whole hero mechanic of a game like this, he's going
to
have to.
All he has to do is literally just keep playing Apex Legends. Because eventually you have to adapt into the role of the game itself.
That, and he's going to probably have to play as many different heroes as possible.
Yeah.
He's going to have to.
There's only like 8 characters.
Yeah,
there's 2 that are hidden behind a paywall, which you can earn in game.
Yeah.
EA. Ruin everything.
You ruined it. EA Sports ruined everything.
You know a company doesn't ruin stuff?
Capcom.
I mean, Capcom can ruin some stuff.
I don't know, I'm being stubborn.
Do I have to remind you about Mega Man Legends? Do I have to remind you about Deep Down? Wally. Asura's Wrath ending was behind DLC paywall.
God, why was it? And then they didn't even have the nerve to release a special edition with everything unlocked. They just kept it there.
Yeah.
It was a good game. You could have re-released it with everything unlocked. Wait.
Mega Man Universe.
All right. You know what game is, you know what company's amazing? Nintendo.
Nintendo's amazing.
The Nintendo Direct was last night. This was the
last afternoon.
Time zones. Weird.
Yeah.
Yesterday evening was the Nintendo Direct. This was apparently the Direct that was supposed to happen several weeks ago. This was the big one, and boy, howdy, was it a big one.
So, I just want to preface this that I'm showing a lot of love for Nintendo, and for a very long time during the era of the Wii and the Wii U, I wouldn't say I was anti-Nintendo. I was just very disappointed about a lot of the stuff that they were doing.
You weren't, like, totally...
I wanted them to be better.
Yeah, that's what all it was. Better. You were basically a disappointed dad with them.
Yes.
Like, I don't... It's not that I hate you, Nintendo. I am very disappointed in you. Mm-hmm. That was you during the Wii and Wii U era. But I have to say, this is probably a good time to be a Nintendo fan.
This is a great time to be a Nintendo fan. This is a great time to have a Nintendo Switch.
Yeah, this is it.
So for those of you who didn't catch the Direct, you know, we're going to run over some of the games that kind of jumped up at us in the order that they were presented through the show. So they started off with a sequel to Super Mario Maker, obviously called Super Mario Maker 2.
You know what's so great about the fact that this was a sequel? When it first appeared, I legit thought that this was just the next port of a Mario Maker game, because we had Mario Maker was on the Wii U.
Yes.
And then they ported that one onto the 3DS. I thought this was just basically Mario Maker ported onto the Switch. And then when I saw the stuff from Mario 3D Land, I'm like, no, this is a sequel.
They added a bunch of stuff. And judging by the art, Luigi's got the yellow hat.
Yes, Luigi's going to play a role in this game.
It's due out in June, for those of you who were fans of the Mario Maker games.
I can't wait to see all the new, psychotic, sadistic levels.
Oh, my God. Some of the levels, I just watch streams of this stuff. That's insane. How do they play this?
I just really want to... And the fact that you can pretty much play this system on the go, I kind of wondering how they're going to incorporate the Switch's mobility and portable functions with this game, because I really feel like there's going to be some stuff involved with it. Next, another game they unveiled was this. Is it really a sequel, or would you say it's a new game plus?
I think it's probably like a new game plus. So, Box Boy was a very popular indie game on the 3DS.
Super
fun game.
Yeah.
It's now being ported in a way to the Switch. It's going to drop on April 26th. It's going to have 200 additional stages as opposed to the original stuff that was found in the Box Boy game. And it's going to have co-op where you have Box Boy and Box Girl.
Yes.
And so it's a perfect game to highlight on today, on Valentine's Day, which is significant other. You can play together.
And it's a great game to play on this. And that's a solid, Switch
title. It's a great game to play on the go.
Yeah.
So that's probably the biggest reason why it was so successful on the 3DS.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's probably going to be even better on the Switch.
It's probably going to look... It's going to not only play, but it's going to look amazing. This is a game I'm excited for.
We spoke about this. We were saying the sport's due out soon. So Dragon Quest XI.
Oh, man. But it's not just Dragon Quest XI. No, this is Dragon Quest XI-S, which is basically an enhanced version of Dragon Quest XI. So when originally Dragon Quest XI was supposed to be coming out to the States, they were saying, okay, because there was a lot of stuff in the Japanese port they weren't going to put in when it came to the States. Basically, this version is everything they didn't want to put in originally. It's now in this game.
Okay.
And oh my gosh, this game looks amazing. Like, I loved it on the PS4, but I don't know what it is about this. It's just everything about it just seems enhanced. It just seems just more mind-blowing than I did when I originally played on the PS4. But I think it also kind of goes back to what we talked about, I'm a grown man and I don't want to sit down in front of a TV to play a JRPG anymore. I want to play a JRPG on the go.
Exactly.
And that's why I kind of feel like when it comes to Dragon Quest XI is that I want to play a game on the go like this. You know, I want to be able to sit down when I'm taking a Duke and playing an RPG. You can't deny that when you're taking a Duke and you're like, man, I could be reading a book, but I really want to play an RPG. Wouldn't you want to play an RPG while you're taking a Duke?
I mean, I play Traverse Strikes Again while I'm
pooping. Well, yeah, but I mean, but like...
That's pretty
good. Yeah. But no, see, Dragon Quest XI is coming out for the Nintendo Switch. It'll be coming out in the fall. This is going to be a fantastic game. And it's even better is that it has 16-bit mode.
Yes, you can, yeah, and you can switch to it on the fly. So you can be playing in the 3D mode and switch to the 16-bit mode on
the fly. The game looks so much fun. I'm really excited for it.
Square Enix is throwing a lot of love onto the Switch Final Fantasy VII, the OG Final Fantasy VII port confirmed for later this year. Final Fantasy IX available now.
Now, like legit, the date, like as soon as they announced it on the video, like you can go down, buy it.
And then they also have a new game called Oninaki, which is from the creators of I Am Setsuna and Lost Fear, which had a very nice cult following. That game is going to be due out this summer. It's an action RPG, I think.
Yeah, it's an action RPG game. So Lost Fear is a very action-based RPG, so. We kind of expect the same vein of stuff from that.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Nintendo also has a couple of updates coming out for a lot of its popular franchises. They did announce that in the spring there's going to be a update 3.0 for Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Which means we'll probably get a lot of spring-based spirit quests this time around. Which has been pretty cool. A lot of the spirit quests that we've been having in Smash Bros. Ultimate has been really fun. Like getting the retro spirits, like the Mega Man spirits, was really cool. Mm-hmm. So we're probably gonna see some stuff like that this time around.
They're gonna have a lot of stuff added to it.
But the big added to it is, of course, Joker will be, I believe, is playable in this update pretty soon.
He's actually gonna be dropping in, I think they said March.
Or
April.
That's still soon.
It's pretty soon.
They did unveil the character model, which looks pretty good. It looks exactly how I expected it to look, so I really can't say much about that.
They did announce that a new Fire Emblem game is gonna be put on the Switch. Fire Emblem Three Houses.
Oh man, I know myself and Gino were really excited when we saw the trailer for this, and I like that how like this trailer legit picks up right where the first trailer ended.
Right.
So this game looks like a lot of fun. This game looks like the first real big addition to like the Fire Emblem franchise. I know I'm looking forward to it. I really want to see where this one goes because they added a lot of really interesting mechanics. The storyline looks massive. They're taking advantage of the Switch's processing power with this one, just like throwing in this huge storyline and seeing where it goes with it. Not to say that the ones on the 3DS weren't amazing. They were great, but I think this is like the first one on the Switch, so that's kind of a big deal.
I mean, I think for Fire Emblem fans, it's just a reason to jump onto the system if they haven't bought it already.
Yeah.
Fire Emblem Three Houses is going to be out on July 26th.
Very soon.
So that's pretty soon when you think about it.
That's pretty soon when you think about it,
What else did we got there? We also had an update to Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker.
So I was almost telling you about this one. The update to Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker. So if you recall, like, when you play Captain Toad's Treasure Tracker on the Switch, they had a little mode where you can shoot, or a player two can shoot the tomatoes at the stage to make things happen. But this time, they added an update where it's officially co-op mode. Like, real co-op mode.
You play as an actual character this time.
So that's why I say, oh, look, Ken, it's now father-son mode for you and Mini-Doom.
I mean, depending, he lost interest in Captain Toad pretty quickly. Mostly because he got sidetracked by Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu.
Okay, that's understandable. So, actually, no, that's at least a legitimate
thing. He is ever so convincing me to get Pokemon now.
Are
and
you?
And considering that I have always been interested in Pokemon, I've never been a fan. I have always, like, I've kept up to it. I know who all, like, you know, I was there with the original 151. I played the Pokemon TCG. Mm. You know, I watched the anime. I've always kept up to date. Oh, this game has XYZ Pokemon or whatever. But I think this is going to be the one game that I'll actually dabble into. And I'm like, let me get my metagame on.
I will say this game, it awakens feels in it. Like, if you played, like, if you've been around since the beginning, this game is going to awaken feels in you. That is what it's going to do. There is a pretty hefty meta.
I've buried my
feelings. Oh, no. There's
a lot of alcohol and anger.
The feels are kind of there. It's nostalgic feels that you're going to get in this game.
So, in a surprising turn of events, a new Battle Royale game is coming out. It's Tetris.
I wonder if Ninja's gonna get involved. What if he's gonna tweet?
Okay, so not really Battle Royale, but Tetris 99 is a free to play game.
What if he's gonna tweet first Tetris 99 tournament number one?
So Tetris 99 puts you and 98 other players against one another.
Yeah.
in a Tetris free-for-all. And what happens is when you get, you know, the four lines Tetris, basically, so if you dump garbage on all the other opposing players that they have to get rid of. It's free.
It's free.
It's on the Nintendo Switch only. So if you have a Nintendo Switch and you're looking for something to play multiplayer,
do it. It's there.
Try to get those leaderboards.
Yeah.
Try to be the last person standing.
I think we should talk about this first before we talk about that.
Oh, we'll definitely talk about this.
Yeah, let's talk about that first.
So, Platinum has a new game coming out on the Nintendo Switch, and it's coming out this year. It's slated for August 30th.
Yeah.
And it's Hideki Kamiya, the creator of Devil May Cry, the original creator of Devil May Cry, and Bayonetta.
Yeah.
And the creator of Nier Automata, teaming up together for this game called Astral Chain, which looks incredibly bizarre. It's like these dudes summon, like, this male and female police officer summon, like, a mech.
Like, dog spirit, dog thing.
Spirit thing.
That has, that they keep on a chain, and you can do combos with the chain and, like, wrap up targets while that thing attacks the thing that's wrapped up in the chain. You can use the chain to grapple hook, and it's an open world game. That's the, it's an open world game.
Astral Chain just looks insane.
Will you say it's off the chain?
Look.
I mean, look, it was asking for it. I'm just saying. Speaking of chains,
that's no segue at all.
I was gonna say there is a segue because, you know, what do you, what's a
chain meta?
But no, but Astral Chain looks amazing. It's basically a platinum game. If you know platinum games and you wondered, hey, what's a platinum game would look like in open world setting? That's what this game is gonna be. It's gonna be fantastic. I'm really looking forward to it. But like I said, I'm always biased because if you follow this from me back in the other podcast, you know I always tout platinum games. You know, I always love platinum games. That's something I will die hard love. It's platinum games.
I want a sequel to Vanquish.
Oh my gosh, I wish there was a sequel to Vanquish.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, could you imagine, like, I don't know.
I can't imagine.
I'm
waiting for another Beautiful Joe Wally.
Know what I'm waiting? There's
I want Wonderful 101 on my Switch.
Exactly. That's what I'm really waiting for. I'm waiting for a Wonderful 101 port on the Switch. And it feels like the time is right for it.
It is.
The time is right.
But you know what was really surprising? How they capped off this Nintendo Direct presentation.
This was a very interesting way to end it.
So they capped off with a new, or maybe not quite so new title
kinda.
In the Legend of Zelda series. There is a remake of the Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening.
Probably the
coming
most
to Nintendo Switch.
Link.
It's the little Legend of Zelda game that if you aren't our age, you'd probably never play.
Yeah, you probably never. Oh, no. DX. The one that came out of the Game Boy Color.
Was that a Link's Awakening? Oh,
yeah.
That's right. They did put that on Game Boy Color.
They did. That's how popular this game was, that it had. Wait, did it also have an advanced release?
No, it was just the DX Game Boy Color.
Yeah.
That was the second release.
Yeah.
This will be its official third.
It's official third release. So, Link's.
And now it's completely remade.
From the ground up, and it looks amazing. So, Link's Awakening was the first Legend of Zelda game on the Game Boy. Was it? Yes, I believe so. I believe it was the first Legend of Zelda game on the Game Boy. You can correct me on that if you can. At me on that. It was the first Legend of Zelda game on the Game Boy. And it was probably, honestly, the most wholesome of all the Legend of Zelda games ever. It was super wholesome. It was like playing through a fairy tale of a game. It wasn't even like compared to like a lot of the other Legend of Zelda games, especially the ones that were out at that time.
Yeah.
It was super wholesome in comparison.
It's wholesome, but I think secretly, like deep down inside, I feel like out of all the Legend of Zeldas, I think Link's Awakening is actually one of the most darkest.
It has the possibility. Oh yes. Don't get me wrong. It has the potential to be super dark.
Like if you really sit there and think about the plot
of
Link's Awakening, that story is
it's
morbid.
Really
as all
morbid. Yeah, it's super morbid. But it's just like, so we were talking about Wind Waker, how they just put in the cartoony graphics to make it.
It was Zelda.
It was Zelda.
And it's like, this game is cute and warm-hearted.
Oh, he
stabbed I'm gonna fight
dude.
Ganon. Oh god, he stabbed Ganon
dude.
In the forehead.
I feel like if Ganon is involved in the game, it's any wholesomeness is thrown out the window.
Usually,
yeah,
that's usually what happens.
But
like the fun ones are the ones where you gotta fight like some other wizard guy.
Yeah,
like you look at Phantom Hourglass. Ganon's not in that.
No, not that one. No.
Spirit Tracks. He's not in
that. No, not one. No.
Four Swords. It was that other evil wizard.
Yeah.
You know.
And then Minish Cap, That was another unsung one. That was like I was talking to Gino about it. And we're like, yeah, when it comes to, like, the wholesome Zelda games, it goes Link's Awakening, Minish Cap, and Spirit Tracks. I think that's the order.
Or the Capcom ones, Oracle of
Seasons. Oh yeah. I had Oracle of Seasons. That's the one I had.
I had both those games and I lost them. I don't know where they are.
Oh, but they were fun too.
They're off. But anyway, Link's Awakening is scheduled for sometime this year.
Sometime this year. They said 2019. I highly recommend when this game comes out, I highly recommend you get it because it doesn't feel like a normal Legend of Zelda game either.
No, it leads me to believe that they're gonna try some, like, they're specifically remaking this one
for a
because
reason.
The obvious next big Zelda game is going to do something drastically different, just like Breath of the Wild did for the franchise as a whole with the brand new take on how open world games should be.
I wouldn't be surprised if we get a lot of amiibos for this game.
Speaking of, did you see all those new amiibos?
Oh my gosh,
there were all those Pokemon amiibos.
Yeah, I really want that. I want that Simon Belmont amiibo. Bad.
I want both, the Simon and Richter.
Oh my god, I need those.
I need my Belmonts.
Yeah.
The Belmont Strut.
It cracked me up that that's like your walk animation in that game. It's like, god, that walk animation.
On my way to slay a vampire.
Yeah. But yeah, the Nintendo Direct, that was 9 solid titles they announced.
And I mean, there was more stuff.
Yeah, there was
those were like the 9 major ones with all the other stuff sprinkled in.
Yeah. There was a lot of other stuff sprinkled in there, but man, there was some solid, big-time stuff announced in this game. This Direct. And, I mean...
And especially that it comes from a company where Nintendo has a very nuanced culture take on how they handle game development.
They do, yeah.
So if you look at, like, you know, when we talked about the Metroid Prime development and how I was like, this is a class act.
Yeah.
I want to go back even further to during the age of the Wii and the Wii U, when Nintendo was struggling financial.
Right.
And Satoru Iwata, bless his soul, may he rest in peace, where he took the burden himself.
Yeah.
And said, hey, we're not doing well financially. It's our fault. I'm going to take a pay cut. He reduced his own pay by $350,000, and then all the other executives on the board took a 25% to 30% pay cut, just so that they didn't have to lay anyone off.
Exactly.
Nintendo.
And this goes back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show.
Yeah,
really.
And it goes back to that, like, when it comes to gaming as a culture, especially as developers, if you really love gaming, and you're not like some corporate spielhead, like, you have a love of gaming, and that's one of the things that I love about Nintendo. Their executives are gamers themselves.
Yes,
they
have
worked on these games themselves.
A lot of people, they'll say that
Iwata
Reggie
is the mind behind the Switch,
and a lot of people will say that Reggie's, like, whole Regginess is a huge act. Oh no, that is Reggie being Reggie. He is that passionate about the company, and not just the company, but is in gaming in general. Yeah. That is legit him. And if you notice also, during the Direct, when they said there was going to be, I forgot what game they said they were delaying.
Well, it was Fire Emblem.
Yeah, it was Fire Emblem.
It got like a 3-month delay.
Yeah, and the way they said, they could have said, oh, it's being pushed back, blah, blah, blah. No, they said, like, look, we want to make sure we give you the best game. So the game is being released 3 months extra. We're putting an extra 3 months in. They didn't say it got pushed back. They did not say we're delaying the release. No, he said we're putting 3 more months of work into this game.
Yeah.
And the fact that they said, like, 3 more months of work, they said, like, we know what we're going to do. We're putting ourselves in this, like, we're giving ourselves this, like, finish line that we have to do so we can give you the best game. That's, like, once again, Nintendo being a huge class act.
Just a quick response to a question in chat. Can the workers go on strike? No, they cannot, because they will lose their jobs.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the big things that's a very hotly debated topic in gaming. None of these workers are unionized.
So, yeah.
You know, most of these gigs are contract-based.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them are freelance. They're come as you go. Take it from me. I've done a lot of work for a lot of different companies on, like, as it happens, you know. Sometimes I'm there for 3 months and I'm done. Sometimes I've been lucky enough to work with a company for more than 2-3 years, and then that's it. And then other times I'm like off and on, callbacks and whatever. Hey, like, you did really good on this one, you want to work on this? I go, okay. So yeah, the industry is not unionized. It's a lot of it is pay as you go, and they can cut you off at any time. So even if I'm slated for a 6-month project, if month 3 they feel like they don't need me, they can go, okay, Ken, you're done.
Yeah.
I go, okay, peace, I'll see you next time. That's, but touching back on Nintendo, it goes to show that Nintendo, above all else, loves the culture of gaming, loves gamers.
They do.
And
yes,
also loves obvious. Every single person that works on their games.
Yes.
That they treat them like family, and they treat them with the respect that they deserve. And at the end of the day, that's what love is. It's just respect.
That's all it is, respect. Really.
Anyway, guys, that's all the time that we have for today. We're running a little extra because of our delays, but...
we still give you a great show regardless.
We give you the great content. As always, you can always give us a follow. Twitch.tv/DigitalEraTwitch. We're here every week, every Thursday, and every Tuesday for the showcase stream, as well as weekly game streams, like Neil Ivan Gaming's playthrough of Dream Daddy that'll be following the show as soon as we log off. You can always find us here at the Waypoint Cafe over at 65 Ludlow Street. Shout outs to the wonderful staff here for being so accommodating and helping us out with the stream equipment that we have here. If you're thinking about streaming and you are in the Lower East Side area, you may want to check it out and try to get your stream on. All the rates and information are available at the Waypoint Cafe website or in the store, www.waypointcafenyc.com. But as always, you can stay tuned for our content since we come to you live from that very location where you can get your pastries and your drinks on.
And your coffees.
Coffees, as well as this hot chocolate. Wintertime. It's cold in New York.
Actually, yeah. It's not even that cold, man. That's weird.
It's been warming up. It's very schizophrenic weather. Yes, but you know what's not schizophrenic? This show. Yes. We're always here for you. As always, until next time.
You've been decoded.